I sometimes follow the journalist David Marr's work. I don't know if anyone's familiar with him. I find him witty and also challenging. I think it's fair to say he's not a fan of the church, and he makes some valid criticisms. Anyway, last year he wrote, this is a quote from him in The Guardian, "To my surprise, I was completely absorbed by a novel exploring the lost possibilities of a faith I abandoned a long time ago." What book exploring Christianity was David Marr reading that absorbed him so much? I wanted to read it as well. Well, it turns out it's this book, Damascus, which follows the life of Paul and the early church. Has anyone read it? Yeah, a few people have. If you haven't read it, I should say, it is kind of a controversial book, but also really powerful. It kind of shook me up and reminded me of the gospel. The gospel reorders people's lives. And not just on a personal level, the gospel can reorder the economy. It tears at the fabric of societies. That's what I want to explore today by highlighting the stories of two women found in Acts 16. I will talk, and then throughout the story, I will also pause and leave you a question that you can sit with and kind of give you space to be able to respond to these two women and their stories. The first woman is Lydia. Lydia is a dealer in purple cloth. She's a businesswoman, a wealthy woman. She and her family are involved in the textiles industry, trading purple cloth. Such an exclusive item is desired by many, but few can afford it. Those who can like to trim their garments with it or line their chairs with purple couch covers. There is an imperial monopoly on who can trade this luxury item, and Lydia has been authorized to do so in Philippi. Business is booming. She is high up on the social ladder. There are slaves working for her so her business can continue to expand. She works hard. She lives well. Her villa is large and comfortable. Lydia kind of sounds like the businessmen and women I used to see on the buses waiting outside my house heading into the city with their expensive suits and dresses. Now they're all working from home. She would fit into this neighborhood. Fairly standard stuff. Although maybe there's a hint that she is not a completely standard woman. Lydia seems to be the one running the business, suggesting perhaps she's either divorced or a widow. She's privileged in a way few women are in her time. And yet, something leads Lydia to move beyond the standard, to leave the gods she was raised with behind. All over the city and in people's homes are little stone statues and shrines to the gods. They help keep the order, maintain the fabric of their society. But Lydia, she heads outside the city to the river to join with women praying by its shores. What drives her to this space? What drives her to take a day off, to stop working? That's not what a good Greek woman does. There are no days off. The economy needs you to keep going. But here is Lydia somewhat shockingly joining Jewish women in their time of prayer. She's leaving the order of a city and coming to its edges. Perhaps you can identify. Maybe your life had an order, a clear trajectory. Uni, job, climbing the ladder, establishing your career, getting a mortgage. But you find it's not enough. You find yourself heading to the edges. You find yourself turning to prayer, becoming a worshipper of God, like Lydia. What resonates with you as you hear Lydia's story? And then there is a girl, whose name we do not know. It doesn't matter, just another slave girl. They're everywhere, so much so that your eyes kind of glaze over, brush past them. She has been trafficked from some place far away from Philippi and brought in to help the bustling city grow. She is a commodity to be purchased. She has no legal rights. Those who own her can do what they want with her body. It is theirs. This girl earns a great deal of money for her owners. She's making them wealthy. Like hundreds of others, slaves keep the economy prospering. It's the natural order of things. It's how civilizations grow, just like we need the low-paid foreign workers in our city to do the work we don't want to do. There are 40 million plus slaves in our world today, generating $1.5 billion annually. They make our clothes, the coffee we like to drink. They work in brothels that many like to frequent. It's a booming business. One in four are children earning money for others. That's the way our world is ordered. A slave girl in Acts 16 earns money for her owners by fortune telling. There's a popular legend that is told in Philippi, a story of a great python, a spirit python that lived in Delphi, a spirit that can see the future which only women can possess. That spirit works for the god Apollo, just like she works for her owners. The gods, she is told, don't care for slaves. Don't care for anyone but themselves, really. They can be cruel and unpredictable. But sometimes, if you're lucky, they'll bless you. She sees how eager so many of the customers are to claim that blessing from the gods. Tell us the future. Tell us it gets better. A spirit coils around this girl. A spirit of despair. She often screams as she works, falls into trances. She looks a little bit mad. And no wonder. There is no end in sight for her, just this cycle. Slavery was and will always be. She exists to serve the whims of others. That's it. Perhaps you can identify. I mean, it's fairly standard stuff for many in our world. What resonates with you as you hear this girl's story? One day, when Lydia is down by the river praying with the women, she meets Paul. He and his friends have just arrived in the city of Philippi, and as is their custom, they look for a synagogue where they can speak about Jesus. But there is no synagogue. Not many Jews reside in this city. There is only a prayer gathering. Somewhat radically, Paul talks to the women. He breaks social etiquette. Paul tells them how the Spirit of God opened up a way for him to travel to the city. He speaks about a vision he had of a man of Macedonia standing and begging him, saying, "Come over to Macedonia and help us." And so here he is, although not among the men of Macedonia, but amongst the women, and he starts to tell them about Jesus. He is speaking to Lydia as if her opinion mattered, as if she could have a say. What strangeness is this? But Lydia finds herself listening. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. Her life is reordered as she aligns herself with Jesus Christ. Lydia signals this change by getting baptized, and not just her whole household is baptized. Then she welcomes Paul and the other disciples of Jesus into her home. This reordering includes her wealth. She uses her wealth and offers hospitality. Paul and his companions are provided with food to eat and a place to sleep at night for as long as they need. God's Spirit reorders her privilege. She provides a place where a new community can begin to meet. The first church in Philippi begins in her home. And Lydia finds all sorts of people start to enter her home. people from a lower social standing, from different ethnic groups coming to worship God together. No longer is her chief concern making money. Her priorities have changed. She becomes generous. All the resources at her disposal she directs to this fledgling church. She longs to see more people have their hearts open to the good news of Jesus. This runs counter to the economic and social order of her day. But the Spirit of God has opened her heart to respond. There is a new order coming to the city of Philippi. As you hear Lydia's story, what resonates with you? One day when the slave girl is wandering the streets, trying to entice people to hear their fortunes, she sees a group leaving Lydia's house. It's a curious group. She's heard rumours about the strange things going on in that household. Shocking things, high class and lower class mingling together. Jews and Gentiles mingling together. They're singing and eating and praying. She starts following the group down the street. They don't see her. So she begins to shout, "These men are slaves of the Most High God who are telling you the way to be saved." The words rise up in her and she can't resist. She continues to shout. Every time she sees them, she chases after them, shouting even louder. She puzzles over these words that come out of her mouth. Are they slaves, really? Like her? They don't look like it. There's a lightness in their step, a difference she can't pin down. A closeness, perhaps, to this God they follow and to one another. The one they claim to serve is unlike any God she's ever encountered before. Their words don't make sense. They speak about a God who died, Jesus crucified. They speak about how through his death there is deliverance, salvation. It's nonsense. There is no salvation, not for her. There's nothing that can bring the order around her down. She shouts louder over the top of them to distract any who might want to hear. No use giving people hope. Foolish, the gods don't care. All that matters is the chance to turn over a profit, please her owners. She tries to steal the crowds away from Paul, the leader of this strange group. She confuses the crowds, offers them a version of salvation from Apollo, if they're willing to pay. Then one day Paul finally stops. She gets a reaction from him at last. He looks at her and he is frustrated. Will he hit her? But instead he shouts, "In the name of Jesus Christ, I command you to come out of her." There is a leaving, an uncoiling of a spirit. And then she finds herself emptied, her gift to see the future gone, just like that. She doesn't know what to do next. She's scared to tell her owners. There are no more words. No more tormenting visions, not even when they beat her, just silence. That name, Jesus Christ, it reorders everything, reduces the gods she's been taught have the ultimate power to nothing. That name, Jesus Christ, threatens the economic order. Her owners have to close their business down and they are not happy. So they seize Paul and another disciple, Silas, drag them before the magistrates and accuse them of throwing the city into an uproar. Their actions threaten our way of life, they say, the natural order of things. She follows on the edges of the marketplace, watches as Paul and Silas are stripped and beaten just like she has been. But they bear it differently to her. Even when they're thrown into jail, she hears how they sing and pray to this Jesus. She hears how the jail doors swing wide open, but they don't escape. Their actions make no sense. They stay and talk to the jailer, once again speaking about this Jesus who can save. Is it true? All Jesus has done is unravel her. What do you think happens to this girl? Does anyone from the church come and sit down with this girl and tell her the full story of Jesus? How the good news could be for her too? Does Lydia reach out and invite this girl into her home? We don't know. What happens to this girl? Maybe the question lingers to make us uncomfortable. In the fictional story Damascus that Christos writes, when Lydia first comes to a church gathering, it's like no other gathering she's been to. It's a quote from the book. There were five of them, three of them women, and of them one a slave with shaven head. There was also a slave youth and an older man, dark-skinned but with a thick, tawny beard. I was shocked anew to see that the free man had his hand on the boy's shoulder, a gesture that I immediately perceived as being gentle and paternal, as though they were father and son, not man and slave. I'm reminded by how shocking the early church gatherings were. The gospel shook the order of things, whether that was the spiritual, religious, social, or economic order of the day. It was all woven together anyway. Jesus brings a new order. We see glimpses of what that looks like here, and we see gaps where Jesus still needs to come. We see glimpses now of the Spirit at work in our context, and still there are gaps. So I want to invite you to sit for a moment with this last question for today. What do we need to allow the Spirit to reorder in our lives, so that even those we least expect might find themselves shocked and intrigued by the gospel? What do we need to allow the Spirit to reorder in our lives, in our church, in our homes, in our economy? Let me give you a time to think and pray, asking God to continue the work He's begun in you.